The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Content warning. This episode contains discussion of murder.
Sometimes it seems that the way a person behaves just doesn't change all that much from situation to situation. That can apply in ways good or bad. If, for instance, a person took shortcuts and the easy way out in high school, there's a great chance that she would do the same once she gets a job. Or if a person finds he makes people laugh by acting a certain way, or gets compliments when dressing a certain way, then you can bet he will repeat those behaviors as well. What all of that boils down to is that if you want to get an idea of how a person might behave in the future, it's often worth taking an extended look at how they acted in similar circumstances in the past. How does this apply in the Delphi case, the 2017 murders of Liberty German and Abigail Williams? Well, at this point, there is quite a bit of speculation about what the defense for Richard Allen might look like and what tactics might be employed by his attorneys, Brad Rosie and Andrew J. Baldwin. To get a bit of insight into that, and to illustrate a scenario some Delphi observers have predicted might happen in the Allen case, we decided to take a look at an ongoing case where Andrew Baldwin represents a man facing multiple murder charges. A case where the defense was able to surprise and outrage the public.
My name is Anya Kane. I'm a journalist.
And I'm Kevin Greenlee. I'm an attorney.
We first connected while looking into the Burger Chef murders, an Indiana cold case. Together, we built a spreadsheet documenting hundreds of cases of restaurant-related homicides. That original spreadsheet gave way to our podcast, The Murder Sheet.
Now we maintain that same research-centric, investigative approach as we look into all sorts of homicides, including unsolved cases, historical crimes, and, of course, restaurant murders.
We don't just chat about the headlines. Our podcast is a platform for our journalism. The Murder Sheet focuses on investigative reporting, thoughtful analysis, thorough research, and in-depth interviews. We're The Murder Sheet.
And this is The Delphi Murders, Andrew Baldwin and the defense of Caden Smith. Of course, before we talk about the defense of Caden Smith, we need to talk about the crime itself and how police investigated it.
That story begins in the early evening hours of October 12, 2021. An off-duty Indianapolis police officer named Nicholas Stewart was making the rounds near a construction site where he was doing security work. The site was in a field near a busy highway on the south side of the city. Stewart spotted something he very much did not expect to see. On a path leading away from the site, Stewart saw two bodies.
Stewart must have been tempted to go and take a closer look at what he now knew was a crime scene. But he kept his distance and immediately called the police. When the on-duty officers arrived, they carefully approached the bodies. They saw that they were two young men. In fact, they would later be identified as Michael James Jr., 22, and Joseph Thomas, who was just 18 years old. Near the dead men were several spent casings.
While searching for evidence, police ventured into an area of tall grass a short distance away. There, they discovered another body, another dead young man. He was later identified as Abdullah Mubarak, who was 17 years old. There were casings around his body as well. All of the young men had been shot multiple times. In fact, about 50 9mm shell casings would be recovered from the crime scene. As Indianapolis residents, we watched the developments in this case closely. The fact that the bodies of three young men were found in an area near a major highway was quite scary and upsetting. We heard a lot of speculation online that a serial killer could be at work. And at first, there seemed to be a frustrating lack of information about what was going on and what had happened to the three victims.
Meanwhile, the police investigation began in earnest. Detectives started going around and talking with people who knew the dead men. And they began hearing pretty similar stories. Michael James's girlfriend, for instance, revealed that James told her he planned to arrange a meeting with someone named Caden in order to get Glock switches from him. She went on to explain that this Caden person was young, white, and lived with his grandmother. Just as a quick note, the three victims in this case were black.
The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, or the ATF, defines a Glock switch as a relatively simple, albeit illegal, device that allows a conventional semi-automatic Glock pistol to function as a fully automatic firearm. The fact that Caden apparently had a supply of these gave police a bit of an indication about what sort of a person Caden might be.
A friend of Michael James told police a bit more about Caden, going so far as to provide the address of Caden's grandmother. Using this information, police were able to identify Caden as 16-year-old Caden Smith.
The investigators also spoke with Joseph Thomas's mother. She remembered that the last time she saw her son alive was on Sunday night, about 48 hours before police discovered his body. Thomas was over at her apartment, and he left a little before 7 p.m. As he left his mother for the final time, he said, "I'm going to meet with Caden and take care of something."
Thomas told a similar story to a friend of his. Sometime on that Sunday afternoon or evening, Thomas told his friend that he was going to see Caden and would return later. Now, what is especially interesting is that while talking to his friend, Thomas actually added a detail he had not shared with his mother. When he saw Caden, Thomas told his friend, he intended to ask him about a gun. Police showed this friend a picture of Caden Smith, and their friend confirmed that this was indeed the Caden that Thomas planned to meet.
So at this point, police had information indicating that two of the three dead men had plans to meet with Caden Smith shortly before their deaths, and that those meetings would involve a discussion about guns. They also had information tying Smith to automatic weapons, which, considering the number of shells recovered from the murder scene, seemed to have been used in the homicides. They also knew that Smith lived with his grandmother, and they had her address.
All of this led investigators to believe, first, that Caden Smith was a viable suspect in the murders, and second, that they could very likely find evidence related to those homicides inside the residence he shared with his grandmother. The court agreed and issued a search warrant. And that search was successful. Police recovered the gun they said killed James, Thomas, and Mubarak. Law enforcement soon arrested Smith, and he was charged with 3 counts of murder, 3 counts of felony murder, 3 counts of robbery resulting in serious bodily injury, dangerous possession of a machine gun, dangerous possession of a firearm, possession of methamphetamine, possession of marijuana, and resisting law enforcement.
Smith was arrested on December 3rd, 2021. Within a couple of weeks, 2 lawyers were appointed to represent him in court, Elizabeth Cleese and David Hennessy. And then, in May 2022, another defense attorney entered the case on Smith's behalf. This third attorney, of course, was Andrew Baldwin. Baldwin, as you know, now also represents Richard Allen, the man charged in the Delphi case.
The case against Smith, as you've heard, was fairly strong. And at first blush, that would seem to pose a problem for the defense attorneys. But a large part of that case rested on the fact that police recovered the murder weapon from the house Smith lived in with his grandmother. So that gave the defense a pretty obvious strategy. Get that gun evidence thrown out.
They made their move on August 29th, 2022, filing a motion asking the court to declare that the warrant that gave investigators permission to search the house was flawed.
Let's read a bit from that defense motion so you can hear exactly what they said was wrong with the warrant.
The affidavit submitted in support of the search does not comply with statutory requirements. The search warrant affidavit failed to establish that Caden Smith was in the residence to be searched at the time of the search. The search warrant affidavit failed to establish that the items to be seized were in the residence to be searched at the time of the search. The search warrant affidavit failed to connect the items to be seized to Caden Smith. The search warrant affidavit failed to establish the credibility and reliability of the hearsay declarants, nor did the totality of the circumstances corroborate the hearsay.
Now, to be clear, the hearsay declarants they are referring to are the friends and family of the victims who told police that James and Thomas had plans to meet with Caden Smith just before the murders. The defense attorneys are basically saying that nothing in the warrant gave the reader any reason to find those stories inherently credible. Now, here's their conclusion.
The search pursuant to the warrant was unreasonable under the Indiana Constitution.
If the court agreed with this conclusion, of course, it would mean that they were saying the search should never have happened. That would mean that the state could not enjoy any benefit from it. In short, prosecutors would not be able to bring up in trial the fact that they found the murder weapon at Smith's residence. This would be a huge blow to their case.
The person who would hear this motion was Jennifer Harrison, the judge of Court 20 in Indiana's Marion County Superior Court. Judges are like anyone else. The way they see the world and how they make their decisions is often strongly influenced by their own experiences. With that in mind, let's take a quick look at Judge Harrison's background.
She previously earned criticism from some quarters for a decision she made in the case of Curtis Walker. That man threatened his fiancée with a steak knife. When police arrived at the scene, he lunged at them, trying to stab them. They shot him multiple times.
Walker lived and faced multiple criminal charges. His bond was set at $80,000. Judge Harrison subsequently reduced that bond to $2,000. According to an article by Vic Reichert from WRTV, that decision drew heavy attack from the Indianapolis chapter of the Fraternal Order of Police. Rick Snyder, the president of that organization, said that Harrison's move put another suspected violent offender back on the streets of Indy's neighborhoods as the revolving door of criminal justice continues to spin in Marion County.
However, the woman Walker had menaced gave reporter Reichert another perspective. She said Walker was a good man who had a mental health breakdown. She said he recognized the severity of what had happened, even though he did not remember the incident. The woman further added that Walker needed to be released because he was not getting the health care he needed in jail, and had in fact come close to dying while incarcerated.
She stressed that the police did not need to worry that he might injure others, that his health was in fact so poor he could barely stand on his own.
We should add that after being released, Walker did not commit any other violent offenses. He later took a plea deal and is awaiting sentencing. While we understand why the Fraternal Order of Police was upset by this incident, we think at the very least the situation was possibly more complex and nuanced than Judge Harrison's critics initially made it seem.
Before becoming a judge, Harrison spent nearly 9 years working at the Marion County Public Defender Agency. There she worked to help defend people charged with major felonies and drug crimes. She took this work quite seriously. In an application Harrison filed with the Indiana Judicial Nominating Commission, she wrote,
"One of the greatest honors of my life was to serve as a public defender. The right to have zealous and effective representation, no matter one's financial status, is one of our most important state and federal constitutional rights. I believe in equal access to justice for all, and my work as a public defender embodied that. This position also allowed me to deeply involve myself in my community, to see the struggles and challenges confronting our residents daily, and to connect my neighbors with resources to provide them better lives and opportunities. As a public defender, I represented Freddie Bailey, a man charged with the brutal murder of a 3-year-old girl. The state filed the life without parole sentence enhancement against him. I worked very hard investigating Mr. Bailey's life up to the point he committed the murder. I spent time interviewing his family members, reviewing school records, working with an expert on his cognitive function, and spending a lot of time with Mr. Bailey himself. It was a very difficult and emotional case for all involved. I met with the prosecutors to propose a solution short of trial that would take the life without parole enhancement off the table. The state's recognition of his humanity and its offer to plead to a term of years opposed to life without parole represents one of my greatest professional accomplishments."
It seems fair to note, then, that at the very least, Judge Harrison holds the rights of defendants in high regard. If she believed that the state violated Caden Smith's rights in allowing the search, she would not hesitate to rule the fruits of that search inadmissible. At the Murder Sheet, we're all about immersive audio experiences.
That's why we love Audible. An Audible subscription gives you access to thousands of audiobook titles. We especially enjoy their robust selection of mysteries, thrillers, and true crime.
I love Audible. I've really enjoyed listening to A Wicked Snow by Greg Olson. This story is all about a CSI investigator with a dark past and a terrible family secret. When I'm listening to Audible, it plunks me right down in the middle of the story. It's so spine-tingling that I can practically feel the cold air on my skin. Audible is your one-stop destination for thrillers and mysteries. Just be prepared to get spooked in the best possible way.
Listening to audiobooks offers a wonderful respite from the day. Audible allows you to listen on the go. I love taking a walk or a drive and just getting lost in a story. My favorite audiobook on Audible so far is Presumed Innocent, the book track edition. This classic legal thriller by Scott Turow is enhanced by a gripping musical soundtrack that amplifies the story's suspense and profound emotional beats.
As a new member, you can try out Audible for free for 30 days. This is such a valuable membership, and you get access to so many new listening experiences, including podcasts, Audible originals, and Audible exclusives like the Words Plus Music series.
Visit audible.com/msheet or text msheet to 500-500.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
One of the reasons why cases in criminal court seem to take a long time to work their way through the system is because at every step of the process, both sides get a chance to weigh in on what's happening. After Caden Smith's attorneys filed their motion to suppress the results of the search, they got an opportunity to file a more detailed argument. And the state, needless to say, got the chance to provide a response to that. A chance to explain exactly why they believed the defense was wrong.
Most of the back and forth between the two sides was what you might expect. The defense said they didn't think the stories the friends and family told were believable, and the prosecution thought they were. The prosecution ended their filing by making the argument that even if the warrant was found to have been issued in error, that did not mean the evidence needed to be thrown out.
If a search warrant affidavit is later found to have failed to establish probable cause, evidence obtained during the warrant's execution is not automatically suppressed. The exclusionary rule does not require the suppression of evidence obtained in reliance on a defective search warrant if the police relied on the warrant in objective good faith. The good faith rule applies as long as the warrant is free from obvious defects other than non-deliberate errors made in its preparation, and that was reasonably believed, by the law enforcement officer to be valid.
Judge Harrison did not agree with that argument. She wrote,
"The court finds the search warrant affidavit was issued without probable cause. The warrant is defective, and the item seized as a result of the warrant must be suppressed, pursuant to the Fourth Amendment and 14th Amendments of the United States Constitution, and Article 1, Section 11 of the Indiana Constitution. The court further finds the affidavit is facially lacking in indicia of probable cause, that the good faith exception does not apply."
As you can imagine, this was not a popular decision. The prosecution filed a motion asking the judge to change her mind. She did not. They also asked her to delay any future proceedings in the case in order to give the Court of Appeals a chance to review her decision. That she agreed to. In the meantime, she allowed Caden Smith to be given a supervised release from jail. Russ McQuaid, a veteran reporter for Fox 59, who's also done a lot of great work on the Delphi case, spoke to some of the victims' family members in order to get their opinions on all of this. Here's a quote he got from Michael James Sr., the father of victim Michael James.
"It is perplexing when you think there is some type of closure in the evidence. There was enough evidence for a judge to sign off on a warrant. Then, when that warrant is executed, you find the murder weapon, another gun, drugs. There's just so much evidence. It's even bewildering to think how someone would have a heart to do that, to know that this overwhelming evidence was present to suppress it." James's mother, Gladys Larson, is actually a former member of the Chicago Police Department. Here's what she told McQuaid.
"It looks like IMPD, they did their job, and they did it actually in a timely manner. We're here today as we're confused as to why the evidence is being suppressed. I don't see any officer running into anyone's home and taking evidence out of the home without a search warrant. I don't see a judge signing off on a search warrant if it was not probable cause to go into the home.
There are a couple of things worth noting. Many of you likely share the frustration and anger the family felt when the evidence was thrown out. From their perspective, it must seem as if the judge was actively working to help ensure that the man who took the lives of their loved ones would get away with that crime. And people who never even met Michael James, Joseph Thomas, or Abdullah Mubarak might simply feel that the justice system protects the guilty at the expense of the innocent.
Frankly, similar thoughts ran through our minds when we first heard a basic summary of this case.
But we need to remember that this was not the irrational action of a rogue jurist who puts the rights of criminals over victims. Judge Harrison appears to be a well-qualified and thoughtful person. The fact that she used to be a public defender does not mean that she is biased against the prosecution. In her application to the Indiana Judicial Nominating Commission, Judge Harrison was asked to provide 5 samples of her legal writing. It seems safe to assume that the samples she chose would be samples she was proud of. 2 of the 5 samples were orders denying the motions of defense attorneys to suppress evidence. Another of the samples was an order where she partially granted and partially denied a defense motion to suppress. Judge Harrison is not a rubber stamp for the defense.
Of course, that does not mean she is necessarily correct. That is why her decision will be reviewed, and reviewed immediately. The trial proceedings in this case will be delayed until the Court of Appeals gets an opportunity to rule on whether or not Judge Harrison's ruling was correct. If they decide she was wrong, then the evidence will come back in and the trial will proceed.
But if they decide she was correct? Well, think of it this way. If the evidence is truly inadmissible, isn't it better that we learn that now, before a trial? Think how horrible it would have been for the families to go through an entire trial, to take the stand in front of Caden Smith and have to discuss the tragic loss of their loved ones, to have the satisfaction of having Caden Smith being found guilty, and only then to learn that the whole thing was for nothing. And they would then have to go through the whole thing all over again in a new trial.
To get a better sense ourselves, we reviewed the PCA. We wanted to see whether or not we felt Judge Harrison's concerns were justified. Keep in mind, the following analysis is just our opinion.
To us, it seemed like the PCA for the search warrant was a good start. We'd have liked to see more. We previously discussed search warrants in other cases, such as the one filed against Ron Logan in the Delphi murders back in March 2017. We noted how in these warrants it's important for authorities to say that they were looking for particular pieces of evidence that they felt would be found in a particular place. This PCA did not go into that level of detail. To be very clear, we are not accusing IMPD of doing a bad job here. We can just see that there is a gray area.
One more thing. Many people were especially unhappy with the fact that Caden Smith was released after the evidence was thrown out. The idea of having a person plausibly accused of murder back out on the streets understandably makes residents a bit nervous. Well, rest assured, he was not free for long.
Judge Harrison set some rather basic and straightforward rules for Smith to follow during his release. Basically, among other things, he was not allowed to possess any firearms, deadly weapons, or ammunition. Sounds simple, doesn't it?
Well, as it turns out, Caden Smith had an active presence on Snapchat under the name Bandhunta Red. Using that account, Smith posted numerous pictures showing himself with weapons. He also posted information indicating that he had some marijuana for sale. He also sent messages indicating he was interested in trading or selling a Smith & Wesson handgun.
All of this served as an apparently inadvertent but highly public admission that he was violating the terms of his release. David Hennessy, one of Smith's attorneys, predictably did not see it quite that way. From his point of view, the rules said that Smith could not possess guns. This meant, he said, that they have to prove he possessed it. Not that he was just in some house where there happened to be guns that were not out in the open.
Judge Harrison did not find that argument compelling. She ordered that Smith would remain in jail without bond. And meanwhile, of course, he would also face three new charges in connection with the new incident. One count of dealing marijuana, one count of invasion of privacy, and one count of visiting a common nuisance, maintaining a controlled substance.
What does all of this mean for the Delphi case? Well, as we mentioned earlier, the co-counsel for Caden Smith, Andrew J. Baldwin, represents half of Richard Allen's defense team. He is an accomplished criminal defense attorney who's been certified as a criminal trial specialist from the National Board of Trial Advocacy since 2008. He's a founding partner in an Indiana firm known as the Criminal Defense Team. Let's make a rather obvious point. The Caden Smith and Richard Allen cases seem to have at least one thing in common. Based on what we know now, in both cases, the most compelling evidence against the accused men appears to be gun-related evidence that was recovered after a search of the accused man's residence. In the Smith case, the defense, as you've heard, fought to get that evidence suppressed. We would not be surprised if the defense in the Delphi case also made moves to fight the validity of the warrant that allowed authorities to search the Allen home.
We would love to give you a detailed and informed analysis of the Delphi warrant so we could understand its strengths or weaknesses. But, like so much in this case, that warrant has been held back from public scrutiny. We do not fully understand why there has been so much secrecy in this case or what authorities hoped it would accomplish. Needless to say, if there are any weaknesses in the search warrant for Richard Allen's house, it seems clear that the defense will do all it can to exploit them.
We have not seen or read the affidavit for the search warrant for Allen's residence. But if it is similar to the Smith affidavit, if, in other words, it relies on hearsay evidence to make a case that Allen should be considered a suspect, and that alone means his house should be searched, then the prosecution should be aware that they might face a repeat of what happened in the Smith case. They might lose what appears to be their biggest piece of evidence, actually tying Richard Allen to the murders of Liberty German and Abigail Williams. Thanks so much for listening to The Murder Sheet. If you have a tip concerning one of the cases we cover, please email us at murdersheet@gmail.com. If you have actionable information about an unsolved crime, please report it to the appropriate authorities.
If you're interested in joining our Patreon, that's available at www.patreon.com/murdersheet. If you want to tip us a bit of money for records requests, you can do so at www.buymeacoffee.com/murdersheet. We very much appreciate any support.
Special thanks to Kevin Tyler Greenlee, who composed the music for The Murder Sheet, and who you can find on the web at kevintg.com.
If you're looking to talk with other listeners about a case we've covered, you can join the Murder Sheet discussion group on Facebook. We mostly focus our time on research and reporting, so we're not on social media much. We do try to check our email account, but we ask for patience as we often receive a lot of messages. Thanks again for listening.